Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Writer's Lounge show number 40. Yes, we have hit that magic 40 mark, February 4th, 2013. Welcome to another installment of the Writer's Lounge show. I am your host, Tom Riddell, and waiting to make a presence here is Robin Eduardo. A brief intro to today's show. I think you're going to love it. The author's name is Joseph Rakowski. He wrote Delivery Cut. It's a unique look at the drug world and how you can become or you can use good customer service to even sell drugs. And yes, open your minds a little bit here, folks, because it's a little different than what you would normally read about cocaine. It's quite the story. I think you're going to enjoy it. Can't wait to hear from Joseph at about quarter after the hour. Also, of course, you can find us over on the blog over at the Writer's Lounge blog at tomriddell.com/blog. And if you go over there, you will see all of the interviews that I have done, or not the interviews, but the reviews that I have done on the books that the authors have written. And in the upper left-hand corner of the page, you will see the Blog Talk Radio player. Find your favorite author on there, click them, and you can listen to their interview here on the Writer's Lounge. Also, of course, everybody has one. We do, too. Facebook. And you can go to our Facebook link very easily by visiting the Blog Talk Radio site and clicking on the link that'll take you to our page, and please like it. We are also on Twitter, and we'd love to hear a tweet from you there. You can also contact us the old-fashioned way at twl11@yahoo.com, and keep that email in mind because upcoming guest authors next time around in 2 weeks on February 18th, we're going to do something a little different. We've got a show open date on that night, and we are going to invite 7 new authors to come onto the show in 5-minute spots. So if you are a new author and you have a book, please send us an email to twl11@yahoo.com. Give us some information about you and your book, and we will plug you in and lock you into a spot on that show. Remember, it's a 5-minute spot. You will be able to come on to the show. You'll be able to talk to us about your book and yourself. And remember, our show in the last 6 months, each show has an average listener rate of 1,500. So we are up there, and people will hear you. And about your book. At this time, I also have to promote Magic Pen Web Design. Offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Magic Pen Web Design promises that your website will be simple in content and easy to navigate, while also delivering an effective, eye-popping design that will attract an interest to the books you write, along with the other products or services that you offer. Magic Pen Web Design promises to work with you and to explore an option package that will be the most affordable for you. So get on over there to magicpenwebdesign.com, fill out the free estimate form, and let us help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And call our instructions for today, of course, You can give us a call at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. And, of course, at this time in the program, we bring on our very special, very lovable, adoring co-host, Robin Eduardo from New Jersey.
Lovable? Well, adoring?
We'll have to talk to your husband about that. You know, Valentine's Day.
Okay.
You got a gift.
I guess I am adorable and loving and adoring, lovable, I don't know, whatever it is. But thank you.
All right. And tell everybody about the Valentine's Day gift that you got early. I was really interested to hear about that.
Well, I haven't received it yet. It hasn't come in the mail yet, but I was surprised. My husband, I've been wanting to upgrade to the new, the Kindle Fire, and I didn't get it last year when it first came out because of the fact that usually when things are released, it has to work out its bugs. So I've been wanting it, and my husband finally the other day, he calls me on the phone and he says, go ahead and order it and get whatever you need to go along with it. And so that was kind of fun, you know, being able to finally upgrade, because I'm not very computer literate and having a tablet and I mean, not just for reading resources, but, the different apps and stuff. I just was excited.
Robin, what are you using now?
I just have a third generation, which is kind of cool. You know, it's all right, but it was
That's what I have, and yeah. I have a problem with the Kindle. I was over today at Barnes & Noble looking at the Nook. Now, there are several.
Oh, I know.
Obviously, nowadays, there's several options you have and different types that you can buy because of the market being flooded with all of these e-readers and everything. So.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that disturbs me, and one thing that I don't really like about some of these Nooks and Kindles that are out, and maybe the Fire would fit into this, but I have, I guess, the third generation as you do, but mine, I don't know, maybe yours is the same, but mine has that paper look. So when I read a book, it looks like I'm actually looking at paper, and I'm not looking at a glossy, reflective glass,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And if
I look at
Kindle Fire, I see that and it immediately turns me off and it makes me think that, well, if I'm going to buy that, why don't I just go and buy an iPad? it seems to be no different. So tell me, in your research, do you find the same, are you thinking along the same lines as me, or is there a difference between an iPad and a Kindle Fire?
I don't know if I could really answer that question because, like I said, I'm not very computer literate. So as far as comparing an iPad to the Fire, I'm sure there's a lot of very similar, apps and things that you would use it for. So I really can say which one is better. But I know, like, the Kindle Fire that I'm getting is it's HD version, so I'm kind of looking forward to that.
Oh.
Because in a way, I mean, the earlier Kindles were strictly for reading, so
yes.
I'm kind of looking forward to using it as almost like a laptop kind of thing.
Yep.
So that was sort of my thing when I was going through what kind of little goodies could I get to go with it, and my only concern was just the keyboard, because the screen, the one I'm getting is only the 7-inch version, so I'm thinking, when I pull up the keyboard, can my big clumsy fingers type anything out? So that was really my only concern, was really the keyboard. And I know my pre-10 grandbaby, that's what I call Amaya, she wanted to know if we could download games and stuff like that. And I don't understand these kids' obsession with gadgets and games and all
well,
that. Because
I'm a kid and I do love games.
Oh, really?
And yeah. So I do.
So you probably would like, you know, the Fire or, well, I mean, obviously you could do that with iPad too. So, I really couldn't tell you as far as like, for reading, you know, converting files, I suppose with Amazon, you know, everything, obviously most of your e-books are, delivered or, you know, you buy them on Amazon. So that's easy enough. As far the iPad, I guess what you'd go to one of the other sellers or you'd have to convert the files yourself. And
right.
See, I don't know anything about these things.
You know, I guess what
I like click and go.
I guess what it is with me, once again, it starts you off with doing something unique, which is simply an e-reader where you read a book and
you have
your laptops and all this other stuff. And now it seems like everything you buy is basically the same thing. It's a laptop, a mini conversion or a mini version of a laptop.
It really is. Yeah.
And so it's kind of like the you know, and I'm going to revert to this because I think a lot of people can understand where I'm coming from. But do you remember not too long ago when we used to have phones? And when we used phones, we would dial them and call somebody and listen to a voice. Now I have a phone, and I would say that probably close to 95% of my time communicating with other people is done through either text, which I said I would never, ever do.
I know.
Or it's on Facebook. So my phone is no longer for talking. It's for texting. And, you know, that's just a little bit off-putting to me because I just feel that when you're going to market something, and this is what I think is happening, everybody's trying to compete with somebody else. But there's a certain amount of us, I think, out here that when we purchase something, we really like it when whoever's selling it sticks to what it is. If I go in and I want scrambled eggs, I'm getting scrambled eggs. And I know what scrambled eggs are. But if I go in and I get something that doesn't look like scrambled eggs and they tell me it's scrambled eggs, I'm not sure I want to buy it. So that's the analogy that I would make on today's world. There's so much stuff out there. And what you have done is done your research to go in and learn about these devices. And I guess that's what you really need to call them. They are devices, gadgets, digital gadgets we have. And they all pretty much do the same thing. So I don't know. I get kind of caught up in that. And, you know, it's like with the iPad and the, all the other eye accessories that we have through Apple. I think they're a great product. They put out very quality product, I believe. But at the same time, when I sit down and write, like I tried to do today, and I did a little bit of writing on my novel, I like a keyboard in front of me. I like the laptop feel. So I do have a MacBook, but I can't. Mm-hmm. I would never be able to do it on an iPad.
Mm-hmm. Well, I almost bought the cover that came. It had a little keyboard that kind of synced to it. You had to set it up so that it would recognize that, you know, the keyboard as a you know, that device.
Right.
But I thought that was pretty cool, and I've seen other people with that actually using the Kindle Fire, you know, with the case, you know, how they flip open so it's like a little easel. And then with this little tiny keyboard in front of it, and it's just so cute. And I thought, well, there you go. You know, we're almost to the days of Star Trek now, where they would pull out some kind of gadget.
Keyboards, believe it or not, as hard as this is to imagine, keyboards are eventually going to disappear.
We
are not going to have them. So that's the next generation that we're looking at right now, right in front of me. I have a large keyboard here on my PC. But in probably another 5-10 years, that'll be gone. And it'll be some other way of communicating, probably through voice, which really bothers me.
Telepathy.
Telepathy would be really cool. But anyways, enough of that, Robin. We are here today to talk to Joseph Rutkowski, and I see that he is online right now waiting patiently for us to get through the first part of this, which is a commentary, and it's about his book called The Delivery Cut. It was written by Joseph Rutkowski and published by Black Rose Writing in 2012. You may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author over at josephrutkowski.com. And this is what Amazon had to say, well, basically a little bit of a blurb on the book itself, and it's in quotations from the main character. And it says, he says, "I am not an unreliable pimp or cracked out drug dealer. I'm not a billionaire from some foreign country or from wherever. Who does not care where his product ends up? I am not a smuggler, pusher, indirect seller, buyer, middler, lookout, or anything in between. I don't cross borders. I am a new addition to the drug world hierarchy. I am simply and responsibly the man who brings you your needs in a suit with a smile and a touch of customer service." End of quote. And this is what I had to say about Joseph's book. What struck me the most about this novel was the morality and socially acceptable path that it didn't take me down. This story doesn't hamstring you into the horrors of drug abuse. It literally and figuratively gives you a huge snort of reality as you take in the high-flying and lucrative experience of being in the drug trades. And yes, and even with the dangers, the success that it can offer. Delivery Cut amazingly explains how cocaine is seen as just another simple product in a supply and demand world, and it educates us through its interestingly dark and rich characters into how to respectfully and responsibly deliver the product with a huge emphasis on good customer service. The main character in the story delivers the drugs, but he is also introduced to his merchandise and samples his goods on more than one occasion. He describes the effects while snorting cocaine for the first time over a mirror, and this is what the character said about that experience. "I could feel the powder running up my nose and back into my sinuses, stinging a little as I finished. I could taste the battery acid again as it dripped down my throat, and I brought it into my mouth. After the third line, I had a pulse in the palm of my hand, and my face was entirely numb. I felt fast as my mind raced." End of quote. The storyline, no pun intended, moves along at a routine pace as the main character leaves behind his life as a law school student and begins a life of delivering packages for a living. The tempo of the story remained fairly consistent, with the interest of the characters holding me to the page until the surprising ending. But I would have liked to have seen a little more conflict injected into the story. Even so, this is a solid work of some very good writing, and I would suggest going out and buying this book for your bookshelf. It's only the first in a long line of best-selling books, and I'm sure Joseph Rutkowski has planned. And with that, I'd like to bring on Joseph. And Joseph, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, good to hear you, sir.
How are you all?
Doing good out here in Minnesota. And you're where, Joseph?
I am in Orlando, Florida.
Oh, wow.
It's nice and sunny here, not cold.
Wow, very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're about 6 or 7 degrees up here in Minnesota, and I think Robin is a little bit warmer in New Jersey, right, Robin?
It was chilly today, but yeah, it's been a lot nicer lately, but not as nice as Orlando.
Yeah. Very.
Yeah.
So, Joseph, that's a very interesting book that you wrote, and I do know you wrote another one. We'll talk about that, too, as we go along here. But could you read an excerpt from your book?
Yeah, definitely. Not a problem at all. All right.
Let me put you on.
After much mental deliberation, I got to my feet and wobbly dredged forward through suburbia. I looked up and down the street, contemplating any idea to bypass the walk, but nothing came to mind. All I could think of now was getting home as fast as possible to deal with the second-rate looks from my parents from another missed family worship outing. Their glares of disappointment to missing faith to get drunk and smoke cigs again was as superficial as the service they attended. The good thing this morning was that I still remained drunk enough not to care. I would be leaving soon, indefinitely, and whatever they did think would only affect me now on holidays. I felt it tongue-in-cheek as my parents were hippies in the 70s and disco shippers in the early 80s. In comparison to their parents' generation, they were just as misguided and misplaced. Mine, however, had at least the opportunity for it to be explained and simplified through status updates on Facebook and word-ruled Twitter feeds. My parents had forgotten who they were back then. My father, the current mayor of my town, and my mother, an attorney, who ran a high-priced criminal law office. I had asked them once before if they were doing what they'd wanted when they grew up. My mother said yes without thinking. My father wished he had been a baseball player. I finally reached the bar where I'd been beaten up and thrown out of less than 8 hours ago and drove home. I managed to beat my parents back from service, and I hurriedly unpacked. It didn't take long. I never catch much stuff. I had read somewhere that the more you own, the more things end up owning you. Every time I thought about the words, I got the same picture stuck in my head. I had seen it in an expired subscription of an old National Geographic magazine my parents had lying around the house. The image was of some foreign country transient with possessions strapped 10 feet high on the top of his car, the weight so heavy as the bottom of it scraped the sands of the desert as it drove. I didn't want anything owning me, and if it didn't fit in one carload, I probably didn't need it. The ironic thing about the picture was on the back there was a naked photograph of a girl from an Aboriginal tribe in Africa. It was the first naked female body I'd ever seen. I finished packing and rushed around the house, finding any food or other items I would need besides what I'd already owned. I piled it all up front door, and in 5 quick trips, I turned into my car. I backed down my driveway and began pulling forward as the light reflecting off my parents' shiny Mercedes hood ornament nearly blinded me. Their dark shades stared right through me like FBI agents on the heels of a fugitive. I had lived with them for over a year now, and based on their glares, I guess they figured there had not been enough time to say our goodbyes. The time back had been miserable, and we butted heads daily. I had changed since I had gone to college, and legally I was allowed to partake in certain aspects of the adult life. Living back at home had its own laws. The worst had been trying to get vagina to follow you back to your parents' house unnoticed before your 12 o'clock curfew. Next came hiding the smell of pot, my breath of alcohol and cigarettes, and finally the sound of vomit hitting the toilet. The next morning, wrath from another overindulging night released its fury. The random girl walk of shame past the breakfast table where mother read the paper and my father headed off to work was also never pleasant. I used to think the reprimands when I was 12 were bad, but as my mom yelled to me, "You're a man whore," I remember I'm 25, I'm hungover, the condom from last night is still hiding under my pants, and a girl whose name I can't remember has just been shown to the door by the three of us. I found these new adult scoldings to register somewhere else entirely. So that would be my little excerpt.
Very good. And, as I picked up the book and started reading it, and, of course, I'm in my 50s here, and I know that back in the 70s, I'm not speaking for Robin here either, but I know that we partaked in a little bit of smoking of pot, but that's pretty much as far as it went. So I was intrigued to hear about the cocaine usage in the book and the different slant on the story, because I was sort of expecting that your book would talk about the horrors of drug abuse, and it touched upon the lifestyle, but it didn't really go into the specifics of what that drug can do to you. But there are some who might say, Joseph, that your novel glorifies the drug trade and the use of drugs. How would you answer that, and what inspired you to write this book?
Oh, I'd answer it like everything. I think, you have different people, and everyone has their own way that they deal with either becoming addicted or not becoming addicted to things. And I think, a lot of what we hear is, you smoke pot, it's a gateway drug, or, you drink, it's a gateway drug, and you do cocaine one time, you'll be addicted for the rest of your life. And I think it was just the way that I viewed it. I didn't think that doing a certain drug automatically into my life was going to be over, and I never dealt with the addiction of it. So that's kind of why I don't talk about it in my book.
you know, of course, there are those bad things that happen to people, but, you know, I wasn't one of them, so I didn't write about it.
Right.
What inspired me, living in Miami, just kind of the way you get into different circles, you know, it makes it easy to expand upon it, to see, you know, lifestyles and you know, what they use, how they go about their daily life.
Did you actually inject yourself into an addict's life? Did you talk to somebody who was an addict and have dealt with some of the characters that are in your book?
I did not speak with an addict, no.
Okay.
No. Yeah.
Robin, what do you got for Joseph?
Well, I mean, I definitely can understand, you know, where Joe is coming from, being that, you know, I live in the tri-state area, definitely within a stone's throw and can look right across the bay at New York City. So, I mean, I totally get being around the scene and everything. And, you know, I don't know if Joe is aware that I am an addiction specialist. So it kind of, you know, I've probably heard every story. Well, maybe not everyone, but, you know, it doesn't surprise me anymore, the different types of people, you know, walks of life. It really does. And it's not just addiction. I'm just saying, you know, even experimentation and anything could be a drug. So, you know, it doesn't even have to be, you know, a classic drug, like you said, alcohol, nicotine, food, you know, so,
yep.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
It is.
Yeah, it the is. Whole, like, the scenes that he has chosen, you know, a student becoming a dealer, you know, and transitioning into that lifestyle and all that. It's pretty interesting.
Yep. And then, you know, the main character, his name is, I believe, James, was a law student who gives that up and decides to become a deliverer of drugs. And, Joseph, you were a law student who decided to give that up and become a writer.
exactly.
It was the obvious connection between you and James, just a coincidence there? Or?
Well, you want to know all his personal business, don't you?
No, I just want to dive right into it here. You know?
Yeah, you do.
No, I think it's just a starting point, just something I had you know, experience with. And, you know, I do write fiction. So I like to always use that as my my line. But, no, I was in law school in Fort Lauderdale, and it just kind of – I had written two books prior, so I wasn't – it wasn't unfamiliar, just that was the point. That was the book that got published. So that was why that is in there. But I guess if you read my other books, you would see references to – I think any writer, you would see references to something they had done in their life.
Yep.
Right, we kind of inject ourselves into the story a little bit, that follows along the line of you write what you know.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think it's an interesting, it's just an interesting line to take. Not a lot of us do it. Some of us really go deep into the fictional part where we don't even involve any part of our lives, or so we think, because I think a lot of times, we can't help but inject our personalities into our characters because, after all, we're the creator of them. You know, we are creating them almost, and I don't mean to get biblical here, but creating them in our own image, so to speak, because a lot of people fall into that. And after they write a story, they'll go back to the story, they'll read it and think, oh, my gosh, I was thinking about that at the time I wrote it, or that character's name was this person, but you don't think about it until after you go back and review it. But anyway, Joseph, how long did it take you to write The Delivery Cut? And can you tell us about the research, obviously, that went into it a little bit more than you just talked about, your story with its deep you know, observations into the drug culture? It's very interesting. And how much research did you have to do, or is it just something that's known down there in Miami?
I guess just on the sense that it is fiction, research would, I guess, be my life. You know, obviously, you know, how far you want to take it as what draws the line between fiction and what you're creating and what you've, you know, what you've actually experienced. I think I kind of took the aspect of you read any of the old authors. You got your Hemingway's, your Kerouac's, your Fitzgerald. All these people have these books that are in the fiction, literary fiction category, but they all are very similar to their lives.
Right.
I think that was kind of my style of writing, is I want people to ask me how much of this was true. That's like my biggest compliment. In all the books I write, I want someone to go, were you there? Did you do this? How much, you know, do you do drugs? You don't look like the person who does that.
Yeah.
I that's my goal, to write as real as fiction as you can get.
What's your, I got to ask you now, because I know a little bit more about you from reading your Facebook page, but what's your fiance think about your writing?
She loves it. She loves all my work.
Has she read it? Before, you know, the big question here is, and I think Robin and I think Robin could appreciate this. I know I could. I was married. I'm no longer. But we have a tendency to write sometimes, and then the first person we show it to would be our significant other. And
yeah.
That's what I did, to have them read it first before it was actually published. Did you do that with her, or did you publish it and then let her read it?
She had read excerpts of it, but by the time I had met her, the book
was already published. So she hadn't, we hadn't been dating when the book actually came out. So she got to read, and then I debated.
Okay. Hey, Joseph, you're breaking up a little bit. Not breaking up, but I'm losing your voice, as if somebody's got a hand over the receiver. Are you still there?
Yeah. Can you hear me better now?
I can hear you good.
Okay.
And also, I wanted to ask you, because it really pulls you in to the point where it almost feels like it's a movie when I'm reading your book, and I almost feel like I'm actually there. And it takes a lot of skill as a writer to be able to do that when they put you in a place like you did in your book. But I was kind of thinking about the movie The French Connection. I don't know if it really has a similar storyline, doesn't really. But do you have any plans or desires for The Delivery Cut to at some point become a movie? Have you entertained that thought?
I have entertained that thought, like an adaptation of the book. I mean, I think that's everyone's biggest thing with The Delivery Cut, is they think it should be a movie.
I do know you did produce a YouTube video, and I want to get that in there, because I did see that, and there's a very familiar face in that movie that you did for the main character. Would be you, right?
That would be.
Okay, so everybody get out there and look for it on YouTube, and you can see Joseph in action, so to speak. It was a very well done, well put together video, I thought.
Yeah, it was a great time making that.
Yeah, Tom mentioned the film that you put up on YouTube, and of course he's like, oh, you gotta check out this guy's picture and everything. He told me to keep my cougar claws in the.
No, Robin.
Like, oh, we got a really good looking guy over here.
He's attached. So
I know.
Yeah.
So am I.
Yeah.
What does
that
mean?
My girlfriend's in the other room right now, listening to that broadcast. I can't wait till she walks out.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm a Jersey girl. I can take her on. Come on.
Awesome.
No, but that's pretty cool that you know that you actually. You know, made a video for your book to promote it. That's I always find those interesting when people do that.
I think it's a good idea to do that.
It absolutely.
It does help to sell books, and I know that from experience from some of the authors that I've been in communication with. So it is a very good idea to do that. Joseph, how long have you been writing, and what advice could you give to our listeners who may decide to be a writer?
I've been writing pretty consistently since 2007.
Only that long, huh?
Yeah. right after I graduated college, I started writing pretty consistently. And then when I entered law school, I hated law school, and I wrote. That's probably 2 years full time.
Are you writing full time now?
Yes.
You are. Wow. You mean you're not, you don't hold another job at all?
I do not.
Wow.
Cool.
I don't want to ask you too much about this, but obviously you're surviving. You know, you're paying the bills, right?
Ramen noodle and PBR are pretty cheap.
Oh, okay. There you go. Okay, now yeah. I understand.
Hey, he's still living the dream, though.
Yeah.
He's making it work. And that's cool. That's very cool.
I think Stephen King and all of those great writers out there came from the same thread. So.
Yep. Builds character.
When the book got published, I was living in a kitchen, my friend's kitchen in D.C., when the book actually got published.
Wow.
On a blow-up mattress. Yeah, I was living there for about 6 months.
So, now that you're a writer, and you really are because you have no other job, describe your day. Give us kind of a little bit of a timeline of when Joseph gets up in the morning and what happens to him during the course of a day. What do you do on any typical normal day?
I get up around 4:35, and I try to write from 5 to noon. Or 4 to noon. That's my 8 hours. So like that's my work day.
Wow.
And by noon, I take off and either read. I do book reviews for Three Guys, One Book right now. So I read a lot of the books that they send me that are coming out.
Okay.
And kind of do that, hang out, maybe do a little, I wouldn't call it journaling, but as the day goes, put some notes down. But I write from 7 noon at noon, I'm done.
Very good.
Or from, 7 in the morning, 4 or 5 to in the morning till noon.
So you say, like, you definitely keep a regular writing schedule, even if you're not actually working on a specific book? Would you say that you're just always writing and always, you know, you've got other books that you're working on, or do you kind of stick to one and keep on going till it's
done? Yeah, I write
one,
finish it, and then move to the next book. And I try to get about 2,000 words a day, 2,000 good words.
Okay, yeah.
And that's just so, kind of my go through.
So, Joseph, tell us about your next book, or the book that followed The Delivery Cut. What's that all about?
It's Barmate, and it follows a young bartender and how he views life. And it's based off the barmaids that come every day to the bar. So you have like a Vietnam vet, you've got a guy going through a divorce, you have an accountant, you have this political kind of science guy, and they each have like something that's going on in their life, and it forms his opinion of marriage, of war.
Still there?
No.
And as you see him, his opinions change from what he thought he knew about being a man. You know, that modern man that we all like to try to be. And it's just kind of it's different. It's totally different than Delivery Cut. Still fast-paced, still edgy, but
what
based
you,
more off of that kind of stuff.
What have you learned between the two? What have you learned from writing Delivery Cut? What is it that you improved upon, if there was anything to improve upon?
Shorter tenses, try not to use transitional sentences or over leading the reader. I think a lot of us tend to think like our reader, we have to dumb it down or guide them to exactly what we want to mean. And it's very easy to overwrite. And the best thing I've learned from the first book to this book, with the help of a lot of other authors and feedback, is to not do that, to not view my readers as idiots. Let them kind of, it's better to leave it open-ended and push them in the direction than just drag them, you know, by their hair to what you want them to think.
Now, did you come about this thought, epiphany, if you will, yourself, or did you receive criticism from others when you asked for it?
Received a lot of criticism. I always ask, my favorite question is not, you like to read the book, is usually like, what did you hate? What were you like, this book just sucks. What did you not like?
Yeah, excellent.
And just asking people that, you know, I I know what the good parts of the book are. I know what everyone liked about the book, but I don't. I want to know what you hated, what you put the book down, because I've just piles and piles of books that I'll read within 40 pages. I'm like, oh, that book sucks. And I would imagine the author, if he wanted to know what was to improve himself, he wouldn't want to know what you like about it. I've done that.
Excellent.
And I get pretty honest answers.
You know, that kind of leads me to, I'm sorry, go ahead, Robin.
No, I was just going to say that that's kind of like, as a reader, when I look at reviews on Amazon, that's kind of the first thing that I do, is I go straight to, the lesser star reviews, because I do want to see what the readers have to say about the book that they didn't like. So that's a very interesting take, and I think that's a very good idea, because as a writer, that's what we're going to want. That's the goal, is to improve, so to maximize the reader's enjoyment. You want to impress readers. You don't really have to worry about impressing other writers. You need to impress your readers. So
your audience.
What you just said makes the most sense.
The people that are on, if you're picturing yourself up on stage, it's the people who are watching you on stage.
The audience.
That's your audience, exactly.
Yep.
And I think also it says a lot for people who do reviews like myself, and also Lori Hedgepath out in San Diego, who is a member of the Writer's Lounge. We all try, I think it's important for a reviewer to, put in a little bit of a criticism about a book. You can always find some little thing that is negative about it, not negative in the aspect that it ruins the story. And sometimes I guess it would.
Right, right.
But for the most part, like Joseph there, and my next question was going to be, as writers, we all face criticisms, and sometimes we receive bad reviews. How do you deal with the not-so-nice aspects of being an author? And I think, Joseph, you've already answered that, but it probably does tear at your creative abilities during some times when you're getting a bad review or you're getting a bad criticism.
I look at who the reviewer was, and it was just like the anonymous Amazon didn't like it. Then I kind of just push those ones away. But like, my girlfriend, my best buddy, and a guy came up to the bar. I guess that was maybe the most hurtful I've ever had happen for a review. Most of my reviews have been pretty good.
Yeah, Joseph, you broke up a little bit there. I don't know if it's your phone cutting out, but could you start that over again about you were standing at the bar and talk to us about that?
And a guy had approached me and my girlfriend and my buddy that I was sitting with, and he's like, hey, you're the author of Delivery Cut, right? And I was like, yeah, I did. He's like, I read your book. And I was like, oh, what'd you think? And he said, I didn't like it. At one point, he even pulled out a red pen. And I was like, I felt bad. I kind of was like, kind of lied to me, I think, to my face, at least. I'd rather you put an anonymous review up. But, I don't really – I love writing. I didn't get into it for I respect readers, critics. I respect, everyone who reads your books, buys your books, takes time to actually read your work. But I didn't get into writing for that. I didn't get into writing books for opinion. I write books because I just love doing it. I love writing. I couldn't see myself not doing it. If everyone hated me and didn't want to read my books, I would still be a writer. I would still write books. Just no one would buy them.
You're on the right path when you get one bad review, and then for every bad review you get three or four good ones. So that comes along with the territory. And I think we, as writers, have also got to grow thick skin to be able to take those criticism.
Yeah, we have to find the silver lining, I think, in all the, any negative reviews that we do receive. Because ultimately, the reviews are for the other readers. It's not supposed to boost our own egos. So when we change our point of view and say, you know, like you mentioned, to look at the negative review and say, well, you know, there's something specific mentioned in there about the book that, you know, if I can improve upon that, you know, then that's a good thing. You kind of have to flip it. Yeah.
I think more, and a lot of the times when I do get a bad review, there's nothing that anyone could say to me that I probably haven't already told myself.
Exactly,
and I think I am my own worst enemy. And to say, like, you didn't like, I pulled out the red pen, too, after it was published. I was like, damn it, why did I put that in there? Or just, you know, I don't think you can make me feel any worse about my writing. I spend, you know, years beating yourself up while you just try to get the book out. So you're used to it.
Yeah, and then you learn. You know, learn from your mistakes, and you move on, and that's the key, to not get so downhearted about a bad first book, if that's what you want to call it. But yours, by no stretch of imagination, was a bad write for your first novel. It was very good, as I've said to a lot of authors behind the Writer's Lounge. I've reviewed over 40 books now, or close to 40, and most all of them have greatly surprised me and shocked me and how good they've been. And it just amazes me that there's such good writers out there. But I do know that there's another aspect of the writing process, and that would be the publishing process. And what have been your experiences, Joseph, and any advice that you would like to share in that regard?
Stick to the rules. They say query letter, one page, have your word count there, have it formatted this way. Go get a book about writing query letters. I think that's your biggest tool, is to make your work as professional, because they don't have time. They get thousands of them. And one mistake in your query letter shows, you know, speaks volumes to your book, to your writing, how much you care. And I went out and got the Writer's Market, that big, you know, book that everyone in there. And it tells you how easy it is to do your query letter. And you'd be surprised how many query letters you see that are not even close to formatted or the way that they want them. It's just like in law school. You can't submit a legal document any way you want. You know, the judge would call you up and just murder you. And I think that's the same thing for anyone who is trying to get published, is the query letter. I think that's the biggest thing. And having your work edited and ready to go when they ask for it. That's my biggest advice, is really work on that. I think that's the key to it. It's getting a good query letter. And then, I mean, you're getting rejections. I think I got probably 80 rejections from different companies.
Wow.
Still get rejections for my second book. Just keep moving, and, you know, sometimes you can ask, you know, what turns you away from it, especially if they've read maybe 100 pages. I know when I submit to Black Rose, they ask for my query letter, then the first 20 pages, then the next 100, and then for the entire manuscript. And that's what's going on kind of right now with Barmaid, as it's being finishing editing, is, you know, you query it out and you get a lot of negative reviews, not negative reviews, but form letters. And just don't let those get to you. That's part of the game. There's no undefeated champions.
Right. Joseph, are you still with Black Rose Writing?
I am, yeah. They have the delivery cut.
Okay, but your second book is still with them, right?
No, I haven't submitted it out yet. It's not
I see. Okay.
It has not been submitted.
Okay. Any thoughts, Robin?
No, I was just listening to his view on the different, you know, because he's speaking from submitting from a traditional viewpoint. So it's always, you know, it's been a little while, I think, since we've spoke to somebody, you know, that still subs traditionally.
Right.
And it's just kind of like it makes me step back for a little bit to think about, you know, those days, because, you know, the last few years it's been all about people self-publishing, and even trad published people getting the rights to their books back and turning around instead of, you know, trying to get them, you know, out there again. Just say, hey, you know, I've already established myself and I have a fan base, and, you know, I'm going to try my hand at this self-publishing thing. And, you know, so it's not just new writers, you know, it's established writers too. So it's always fun to hear somebody talk about, you know, making sure, you know, crafting the query letter and just honing your writing and going over it again and again, and you know, it's fun.
it's actually refreshing to step back into those old days, like you say, that when people did submit query letters.
Yeah. Well, because there was standards, you know, and the self-publishing scene. That's one of the things that I dislike about it, is that there's so many people now that they think that they can cut corners, you know, and it makes a lazy writer
a lot of people.
Yeah. And it really makes it harder for everybody else who does take the craft seriously. You know, if there was a slush pile in traditional publishing, it seems to me like there's an even bigger slush pile now with, you know, and this, everybody with their freebies, you know. It just drives me nuts. We got to work harder.
Joseph, do you belong to any kind of a writer's group? I know in the past when I used to read the Writer's Digest, for instance, come out quite a bit, and I did subscribe to that. They encouraged people to get involved in a writer's group. Do you belong to a writer's group?
I don't. I'm very isolated in my contact with other writers or people trying to become authors. I don't like a lot of outside criticism.
Right.
I don't like a lot of outside influences. I don't want
to have
my right sound or have ideas pushed up other people.
And I guess, too, a lot of it is we have our own writers group today online, I think. You know, if we want to join a group, it's very easy to do that online, where in the past, I think people would get together in a room in a library, local library somewhere, and sit down and critique each other's writing or join a class and go. I think those days, and I could be wrong, and they may still do that, but I think those days are sort of dwindling away because of the internet now and all of the opportunities we have to connect up with other writers and to discuss our work, you know, in like what we're doing right now, basically. So I think it's a good thing. And then, of course, you know, I long for those old days when we did those kind of things, and it's refreshing, actually, to hear you talk about that. But we have about 7 minutes left here on the Writer's Lounge, and if you would like to call into the show and have a question or comment for Joseph, I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. It's 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. So pick up the phone, give us a call, and get your question or comment in. And, of course, you can always go to the archives of the Writer's Lounge and listen to Joseph's interview here after the show ends in another 7 minutes. So keep that in mind. We're always here for you. There's over 40 shows now, and we look forward to having you here on the program. And, Joseph, I ask everybody that's on the show this one question. I find it very interesting. But if you could sit down and talk with a famous person or writer, who would it be, and what would be the first question you would ask them? What I usually do is set it up like this. You're led down a hallway, and there's a single door at the end of this hallway, and you open that single door, and you walk into a room that's totally empty. In the middle of it, there's a table, and the person that you're thinking about is sitting at that table, and you walk in, you and he or her are the only ones in that room. What would be the first question that you would ask them? Who would it be?
I know immediately. I mean, I have so many authors that I were like, oh, who would I really want to? But Hunter Thompson, he's my favorite author.
Mm-hmm.
He's that gonzo journalism. He writes as close to creative nonfiction, fiction, however you want to take it. I love it. It's so real.
My biggest question is, how do you separate yourself from the things that you write, the pages that you're capturing? How do you sit back on the days when you're no longer that character? And, you know, because you live that character, you are that character while you're writing that book. And then some people expect you to act ways of, you know, the characters. They find it hard to make a difference between James and Joseph. I think I would ask him how he went about doing it.
Characters that you wrote about. Yeah, you're falling off again. Your volume is really low. We did pick up some of that, and I think on the playback you'll still be able to hear it. It was a little bit low in volume there, but I think we did pick it up. And I always like asking that of authors that are new authors, because they've come up with some really interesting questions and people that they would want to meet. But as we move down here and get close to the end, where is it that people could find you on the internet, Joseph?
JosephRakowski.com is my website. So you can find me there, and my email is there if you want to hit me an email up or all that kind
of
good stuff.
And of course, you can go to his YouTube. You have a YouTube profile too, right?
I do. I just know the delivery. If you just type in the Delivery Cut book trailer, it comes up.
Yep. So we want to take a look at Joseph in action, per se. That would be where you'd want to go.
The beginning of my acting career.
One last question about that in regards to the acting. If you could choose an actor to play the main character, who would it be?
Shia LaBeouf.
Who?
Shia LaBeouf.
Okay. Robin
Holes. I think it was, wasn't
Holes,
it?
Transformers, Lawless.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
I know who he is.
I'm not familiar, so. Well, Joseph, it's been a great interview. We've picked up a lot of good information. We wish you all the best in your next book.
Thank you for having me.
I think of you now as sitting somewhere in Florida in a room, just working away on your next novel, and an image will be burned into my mind from now on until eternity. So I wish you luck, my friend, and I think at some point I want a hard copy of your books so I can put them on my
book
here. So I would love to be able to get a hard copy. So we will be looking for your work in the future. Thank you so much for being on the show. And
thank you.
Say hello to your lovely... Your lovely fiance also.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate you for having me, Robin and Tom. That was great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Right.
Okay, Robin, there we go with show number 40. It's in the books, or as they say in the film business, it's in the can. And we've come to the end of another one. And our next show, of course, will be on February 18th. And once again, get on over to the Facebook page. I've posted a post over there in regards to what you can do to send in or to comment on that page telling us that you want to be on the show for that five-minute spot, one of seven new authors. And if you want to get a hold of us and give us the information to your book, the seven spots are still open. We filled a couple of them, and you can always do that once again by contacting us at twl11@yahoo.com. Send us a synopsis of the book, a link to the book, whatever, and then also include the phone number that you'll be calling in to the show so we know where you're queued up, and I will respond back to you to let you know if we're going to or not. So I appreciate it. And Robin, as always, it's been great. Again, I'm glad we're both feeling a little bit better.
Yeah, getting there.
Yep. And so what do we always say here on the Writer's Lounge?
It's good reading and good writing. Have a great night, everybody.
See you. And if I can only find them. There we go.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather.